The new movie Waking Ned Devine is about what happens to two older men in a small coastal village in Ireland who've been best friends for life when a freak financial windfall alters the landscape.
Michael O'Sullivan, are you a millionaire?
Well, Jackie, would I spend my time sitting on this old beach if I was a millionaire?
And I believe you would.
Are you going in for a dip?
More important things to do. Now look and see what I found in the small print of the Irish Times last night.
Look at it. The front page, down at the bottom, winking at you. Lot of results. Winner from County Morwes.
A local winner. God, that's a thing.
Jeffers, Michael, it's more than local. County Morwes is big, but there's only one village in it.
Tullymore. Is this a fact, Jackie? A winner in the village?
In Tullymore itself, yes.
And, how many are living there now?
Well, there's 52 precisely, Michael. You've not won, I've not won, and Annie's not won. That leaves a total of 49.
And one is the winner. Has the news reached Tullymore?
Nobody's figured it out yet. So nobody knows but the winner.
As it turns out, the lottery winner is a man named Ned Devine. Michael and Jackie track him down. They find him dead of a heart attack in front of the TV with the winning ticket still in his hand. Apparently, the shock of winning was too much for him. When a lottery official comes to town to give Ned the check, Jackie and Michael hastily cook up a scheme where Michael impersonates Ned and receives the winnings. Michael and Jackie have to convince the rest of Tullymore to play along and share in the winnings. Fresh Air's Barbara Bogave spoke with David Kelly, who plays Michael O'Sullivan, and Kirk Jones, who wrote and directed the film. She first asked Kirk Jones how he came up with the idea for the movie.
The whole idea for the film really started with a newspaper clipping that I read in an English newspaper, which said that in a tiny little village in the middle of nowhere, a postmistress had put a sign in her window which said, "No, I have not won the lottery." And the story was that the local community was beginning to suspect her of having won some money. She said she hadn't won anything, and they said she was so tight-fisted that even if she had won, she'd never tell anyone anyway. And I was just really intrigued by this idea of a huge lottery winner hidden within in a small community. And that really sparked the idea for the whole film.
I imagine you, or maybe all of you there on the set, became somewhat connoisseurs of lottery stories. Did you hear more lottery stories as you filmed?
I wasn't aware of too many as we were filming, but in post-production and since the film is since the film's released recently, people have been telling me stories. There was a story in a small Spanish village where a lottery winner went unnoticed and actually died and was buried. And it was a good couple of months before they realised that he was the winner. And not only was he the winner, but he had the winning ticket in his best suit, which he'd been buried in. So there was a huge debate within the family as to whether they should dig him up and get the ticket or leave him be. There was another story I was told of a lady who was very unfortunate. She won the lottery and went to the head offices in New York and died of a heart attack as the check was being handed over. And it's very interesting when you see life imitating art in that way.
David, had you heard some stories too?
No, not really. Either people say to you, "No, I didn't win it this week either." That's about all that's said. It's hugely popular in Ireland. And I suppose I'm about the only one who never played. My wife always played, and my daughter. But I'd never, ever played until this film. Towards the end of the film, I joined in, and I now play it fairly regularly.
Now, what happens in the film is really something that could only happen in a small village, that a whole group of people would collude to evade the law and come by the winnings of the lottery fraudulently. Kirk, did you have much experience of village life when you started?
I grew up in a small village near Bristol, and when I came to write the project, I spent a lot of time in Southern Ireland in a small village there, and used to travel from that village each day to even smaller communities. And I saw a lot of people, a lot of characters who I used to base my own characters on when I came to write the script.
So who inspired, or what was the inspiration for some of the subplots in the film? And I'm thinking there is one of a a woman who couldn't marry her true love because he's a pig farmer and he just smells too bad.
Well, the pig farmer in particular came from... I used to live in a small village near Bristol, and just up the road was a pig farm, and I used to see this guy who every day was absolutely covered in muck. But every evening I'd see him in the pub, and he was as clean as a whistle. He was beautifully dressed and very clean and tidy, but it was interesting to see that very few people stood next to him at the bar, even though he didn't smell in the evenings. The characters of Jackie and Michael, I didn't really realise too much until I'd finished the film that I suspect they were pretty heavily based on the relationship that I had with my own grandfather. And it's only now looking back at the film that I can see so many qualities that David and Ian have portrayed so beautifully that probably came from my own grandfather.
Kirk, you wrote the script and then you shopped it around Hollywood, right? And you got some reactions that gave you pause. What did Hollywood want to do with the story?
I never directly approached Hollywood, but once the script was finished, it was taken to Cannes, and we found that there was a lot of interest, both from UK companies and American companies. And one company in particular who we went quite a way down the road with asked me to rewrite the lead characters, which I refused to do. And then they said, OK, if you want to work with really mature actors, we've got a great idea. Let's rewrite it and set it in Canada, and we'll cast Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau. And I kind of, that was just like the last straw for me. I mean, I really respect those guys, and I think they've done incredible work over the years. But it felt like it would suddenly become their movie. And I just the whole American thing just scared me a little bit, I have to be honest. So we kind of walked away from that as well.
Now, the real charm of Waking Ned Devine is the relationship between your character, David, of Michael and Neil, and his best friend.
Yeah.
It's kind of a relationship I think a lot of people would identify with as only happening, or usually happening in a really small town, where you just do anything, one person would do anything for the other, and you also have lived your whole lives together, and you kind of maintain this, at least in this case, a classic childhood dynamic, where one guy is really the naughty, devilish one, who always gets the more tractable and innocent friend to do his dirty work.
Yes.
Now, did you, David, have a model in your head from your own experience for the friendship between these two men?
Not really. No, I mean, it was all there on the page. I mean, the thing is beautifully, that script is beautifully honed, and it's there. And I certainly identified with the kind of 9-stone weakling, which is a couple of stone heavier than I am. And it worked terribly well. And, of course, they wouldn't have had a real childhood. You know, they would have had to work hard, helping their parents with the job of the fishing, the farming, whatever. So it would have been a pretty tough childhood. So they are, as the character says, they grew old together, but they never grew up. And now they're in a position where they can sort of enjoy a romp. And that's basically what it's about. It's about this marvelous adventure that these two aged kids are having. It's less about the money than it is about that. And, of course, about the friendship and, let's face it, the love that exists between two true mates.
I'm talking with David Kelly and Kirk Jones, and they both worked on the new film Waking Ned Devine. Kirk Jones is the writer and the director of the movie, and David Kelly is one of the stars. Let's take a break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guests are Kirk Jones and David Kelly. Kirk Jones wrote and directed the new film Waking Ned Devine. David Kelly is one of the stars of the movie. Kirk, you shot Waking Ned Devine on the Isle of Man, even though the setting is a small village of Tullymore in Ireland. What did the Isle of Man offer that you couldn't find in Ireland?
A number of things, actually, both creative and kind of practical. I did most of my research in Southern Ireland, and as far as I could see, that's where I was going to shoot the film. When we came down to the finance and the pre-production, it suddenly became obvious that Ireland wasn't the most financially viable place to shoot. cost of living there is pretty expensive, and I was unable to use my unable to use my English crew if I'd have shot there, because if we'd have taken advantage of the tax breaks, I would have had to have used an Irish crew, which would have been fine creatively, but it just meant that from a practical point of view, I couldn't ask the kind of favours that I knew I could ask of my own crew. So I was asked to look at the Isle of Man, and I went up there really not sure why I was going there at all in the first place. I'd never been there before. But within about half a day, I found the most stunning locations, equally as beautiful as anything I'd found in Southern Ireland. And I also found something I'd been looking for in Southern Ireland but hadn't quite found, and that was a tiny, tiny community which photographically said, this is a tiny village completely in the middle of nowhere. And in Ireland, I'd found a lot of very charming villages, but I suspect, like a number of places around the world, small villages often grow up along quite long roads. But what I found in the Isle of Man was a tiny, tiny community, a small cluster of very charming and characterful buildings and houses. And from a practical point of view, what made it even more attractive was that the whole village was protected and listed and was owned by the government. So instead of approaching 100 people and saying, can we please shoot in your village, we just spoke to one guy at the Isle of Man Film Commission, and he said, fine, you can have the whole village.
So how did the 100 townspeople feel about that?
The townspeople that were already there were very interested in the idea of us shooting there. And I was very aware that basically the government had given us the village and not the people that lived there. I suspect a number of them lived in rented accommodation because the government basically owned the buildings. So I suggested that one evening we get everyone together, we have a drink and some sandwiches, and that I have the opportunity to talk to the villagers and say, look, you know, we're going to be here for 6 weeks, and I apologise in advance for any inconvenience and stuff. So we turned up, and it was a very frosty reception, I have to say, when I walked in. Everyone was just staring. I didn't see one person smile. I tried to crack a few jokes and just couldn't get through to them at all. And I went through the kind of logistics of what we'd be doing and when we'd be doing it, and suddenly realised that maybe the only thing that could save me and kind of warm them up a bit was if I told them the story of the film itself. And ironically, it was the story of the film which made them smile and laugh, and then they applauded at the end. And from that point onwards, everyone who lived in the village was totally committed to helping us make our film, and it was a great experience to shoot there, and they were very friendly and very helpful.
A lot of them became extras.
They did. I'd already established a technique in TV commercials for using people who were genuinely kind of charming and eccentric and with very interesting faces. And it's something I was very keen to carry through into the film. And coincidentally, a lot of the people who actually lived in the village were great, great characters. So I used those as my extras. And a couple of them had a few lines and had very small parts in the film.
Kirk, I read that Waking Ned Devine wasn't officially competing at Cannes this year, but you drove the only print of the film down from London. You drove it yourself for a screening. This sounds a little bit like a scene from a movie. Was it high drama? Were you racing the clock to get to Cannes, fantasizing about the million-dollar offers you'd get right there at the screening?
It wasn't quite that romantic, to be honest. It was a very interesting situation because with a couple of weeks to go, we suddenly realised that we hadn't booked any flights down to the south of France. And when we checked flights out, there were only club class available, and we had so little money left in the budget by that point that it just seemed ridiculous to waste that kind of money. So my producer, who had driven down with a film the year before, Glynis Murray, she said, why don't we just drive the film down again? She said, it's really enjoyable, and it's a great drive. So we drove down very luxuriously in a very nice Cherokee Jeep with leather seats and a CD player, and had a great trip down. But by the time I got to Cannes, and especially after people were starting to talk about the film being the hit of the festival, a couple of journalists had got hold of the story of me driving down and started to romanticise it a little bit, I think. I think the worst version I got was that I'd almost stolen an old rusty van from London, driven all the way through the night to get to Cannes just in time before the competition closed and things. So basically, it was a great trip down, and I'd definitely do it again. But Cannes was quite an interesting experience, and we just seemed to have a huge amount of luck there.
How quickly did you get a response from a studio?
Within seconds of the end credits rolling on the film, there were five major studios bidding against each other for the rights to the film for America. And the bidding went on through the night. And I remember Lindsay Law, the president of Searchlight, of Fox Searchlight, telling me that he tried to buy the film until 3 o'clock in the morning and was unable to. He went to bed until five, couldn't sleep, got up at five and started pacing up and down the Croisette, and eventually purchased the film just before lunchtime. So it was a very, very exciting time. And we'd arrived in Cannes with nobody knowing who we were. And as soon as we'd had the screening and the bidding war, we then were inundated with interviews and live TV link-ups. And it was that actually was like a scene from a film, not so much the driving down in the first place.
The headline, I remember it in the paper, Bidding War for Ned. Remember the next day? Bidding War, it was called, yeah.
Yeah.
David Kelly and Kirk Jones, I want to thank you very much for joining me today. It was fun.
Thank you very much. It was a joy.
Thank you very much indeed.
Kirk Jones wrote and directed Waking Ned Devine. David Kelly stars in the film. They spoke with Fresh Air's Barbara Bogave.